Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to today's Caffeine for the Soul. And I kind of am really setting out into today's exploration a little hesitantly, because I understand that what I'm speaking about is, for many people, an incredibly sensitive topic. And if you're feeling very raw as you listen to this, I want to say, I'm going to share as best I can what I see about what's behind racism, what's behind fear, what's behind hate, what's behind what's been going on in the world over the past week, but really since the beginning of time. And if you listen to it to check to see if I'm right and agree with you and am being hard enough on whoever you think is wrong, you're probably not going to enjoy this. Not saying don't listen, but I'm aware of that. I'm going to do my best. And I'm just going to ask a little bit of leeway to explore what it is I want to explore. I got an email, funnily enough, the week before Charlottesville, from a young woman in the African-American community who wrote to me to say, I always feel that somehow the black community is left out of so many spiritual understandings and just need a little help from you. How do I come to grips with everything being thought imagined or made up by our personal thought when I walk out the door and I'm judged by my color? My son-in-law is Mexican and I live here in good old Texas. So much hate is directed at Mexicans and Muslims also. How do I deal with prejudice from psychologically innocent assholes? I hope you find that funny. Is prejudice or fear of the police made up of thought? Is violence against African-American young men made up of thought? Please help. I'm not being sarcastic, but absolutely love the principles. Perhaps you can point me in the right direction. So I was going to address that, and then everything that happened, and I thought I wanted to give it a little more thought and try and address it a little more generally. I was having a conversation with my daughter, who'd watched a lot of the news around Charlottesville. She's just about to turn 20, and she was scared. And what scared her wasn't just what happened, but it was that when she watched, there was a particular clip shown on Vice, the HBO channel, about a 25-minute clip, and she said you could just see the same amount of hate and anger on both sides. And that was what scared her. And what I did my best to speak to her about, and what I'm going to do my best to speak to this young woman who wrote to me about, is it is only because everything is made of thought that people can judge another person by the color of their skin. It's only because everything is thought created but seems so real to us that anyone could feel hate towards somebody because of where they were born or their religious beliefs or even their actions in the world. And I kind of loved the question, how do I deal with prejudice from psychologically innocent assholes? Because it speaks to the truth of a deeper understanding of what's going on with human beings. Is on the one hand, as we see that we live in a thought-created world, that the nature of thought and consciousness is that whatever we think seems real to us. It doesn't seem like thought. It doesn't seem like a dream. It seems real. And if people really are out to get you, if people who look differently to you are really the cause of your unhappiness, if people who believe in a different religion than you are really the source of everything that is wrong and bad in the world, then you have no choice but to speak out against them in whatever way makes sense to you. You will be scared because the threat looks real. And you have no choice but to respond to that however you do, whether it's through anger and striking out in return or through sheltering. Or through escape. And the reason that nobody can hear you're wrong is because in their thought-created reality, they're not. It's a difficult thing to get across because it seems so obvious to us that we are right and they are wrong. But the one analogy that I found that sometimes people can kind of hear is, and I don't know if this would be you or maybe one of your kids who fell in love for the first time at 12, 13, 14. And when that love went wrong, as it probably did, somebody, well-meaning adult, said to you, "That's not really love. Don't worry, you'll get over it." You didn't think, "Oh, how reassuring. Oh, what a good point. Oh, good to know that wiser people have my back." You just thought they were idiots and didn't understand. And that's why we can't address racism. We can't address hate at the level of logic. Because at the level of logic, it makes perfect sense. Because within the realities, the thought-created realities, the separate realities that everybody lives in by human design, what we do is logical. How we react is logical. But what's behind that? Well, when we understand why reality looks so real, that thought and consciousness together just create an experience of life, it begins to give us a little bit of separation, a little bit of space around what looks so real to us. And the fundamental illusion, illusory reality that looks so real but just isn't, is that you are different from me at a fundamental level, or I am different from you, that we are not of the same, that we are not one and the same, and that to judge each other, to evaluate each other based on the color of our skin, based on the religion we have, based on the country we were born in, makes no more sense than judging somebody based on the color of their eyes or the color of their hair. And that there's a deeper level of truth at which the simple fact of being human connects us, even as our thought-created realities seem to divide us. So I remember, funnily enough, when my daughter, that same daughter, was born, one of the last days of August in 1997, and 24 hours later, there was a car crash in Paris, and Dodi Al-Fayed and Henri Paul and Diana Spencer died. And when I came back into the hospital early the next morning, my wife told me a nurse had come into a room in the middle of the night crying and saying, "Wake up, the princess is dead." Now, I remember that night because my daughter was born, but I remember a week later, we watched Diana's funeral on television, and then we took our new baby girl out in her stroller for air, and the streets were filled with people streaming out of their homes. We were living in London at the time, and there was a bond between everybody in that street that day I'd almost never felt before outside of a football stadium or a pep rally, a sense of our common humanity, regardless of the points of view towards monarchy or political sensibilities we developed along the way. There were neighbors in our street we'd lived beside for years and never spoken to who joined us on our walk. The streets were packed. And it really felt like nobody wanted anything other than the feeling of not being alone. I felt that same sense of connection after the planes crashed into the World Trade Center in 2001, and all of Los Angeles seemed to forgive one another for pretty much everything. I mean, there were drivers on the freeway that actually waved at me and encouraged me to go ahead of them. Never happened before, never happened since. That shared humanity is the only thing, that recognition that underneath it all, we are all the same, we are all one, is the only thing that will ultimately stamp out racism, stamp out religious prejudice, help us go beyond the theory of psychological innocence, that we're all doing the best we can given the thoughts we have that look real to us, to the reality of a better world. I took my son a few years back now to visit a gang unit at a maximum security prison in Northern California. and I'd been invited to speak with the prisoners about my book, The Inside Out Revolution, which had been distributed as part of a course they were doing. And it was scary to me because it was new to me. And my son and I had to sign a disclaimer that acknowledged if we were taken hostage, they wouldn't negotiate our safe release. But I was going because I really was looking forward to sharing the principles of who we are at core before we grow up and begin living in our increasingly separate realities. And the talk seemed to be going well. They were a receptive group. Until one particularly large, heavily tattooed African-American man wearing the red trousers that marked him out as a convicted murderer raised his hand at the back and said, angrily, "It sounds to me like you're dissing Jesus." Now, I'm in a prison, in a gang unit, with my son. No guards in the room. The guards were outside the room. About 60 men. About half of them convicted murderers. All in gangs, all from gangs. And the room got uncomfortably quiet. And I asked him to explain what he meant. And he said that I was suggesting that all people were a part of a larger energy that exists before the formation of any particular affiliation, religion, or spiritual belief system. And that when our minds get quiet and we're able to tap into life at this level, our burdens are lifted, at least for those moments, and we feel deeply connected to life and with one another, regardless of our differences. But that's where it got interesting, because he went on to say that this was his experience as well. The difference, and what he was upset about, was that I was calling that oneness, that energy, a universal mind. And he called it God. And he knew that the peace of mind I was talking about was only available through his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, whereas he heard me saying that it was available to everyone regardless of what they had come to believe. And for whatever reason, I stopped being scared, and I could see him for a minute. And when I looked into his eyes, I could see that underneath his fear and uncertainty, there was a genuine desire to understand what I was saying. And so I told him I couldn't make an argument for my story about what spiritual energy really is or where it came from that was better than his, but that I was affected, I was moved, that someone who seemed as unlike me as anyone I could imagine had seen the same truths about the energy behind life as I had, even though he had a different explanation than me for what it was and how it came about and what it meant. And I went on to share with him and everyone else in the prison that a number of people had asked me before coming to speak what a middle-class white guy from a small town in New England could possibly have to share a value with gang members from the streets of the inner city. And honestly, I had been inclined to agree with them. But it occurred to me that while I hadn't done what any of them had done to wind up in that prison, in that jail, I'd felt how they felt. I wanted to love and be loved. I wanted to experience more joy and less suffering. I wanted to feel at peace in myself and in the world. And at times I had felt so angry and scared and alone and separate that I wanted to strike out at everyone around me. And the room got quiet, incredibly quiet, so still. To the point where afterwards my son asked me, what was that? Because in that moment, every one of us in the room woke up just for a moment from our separate thought-created realities, our separate thought-created worlds, into the deeper truth of our shared humanity. And whenever that happens, we experience peace and we experience kinship. The kind of kinship C.S. Lewis talked about when he wrote, "Friendship is born at the moment when one man says to another, 'What, you too? I thought I was the only one.'" So, I don't personally agree with much of what is being done and said in what's been going on in these rallies, but I don't need to. Because in the end, more important to me than anything I personally believe about what defines good and bad and right or wrong, what I know is that we are all the same. We are all one. We are all of the same energy, underneath the form, before the form, and we will always do the best we can given the thinking we have that looks real to us, and the more we see about the nature of our thought-created realities and what's true underneath them, the more space there'll be to see one another, not through the eyes of fear, but from that place in us where we are all the same. From that place in us that when I am in that place in me and you are in that place in you, there is only one of us. And for me, anything we do that helps us find that space, that helps us live from that space, that helps us explore human conflict, racism, prejudice, whatever forms it takes from that place, the more the consciousness of every human being will rise, and the more hope there is for the well-being of our shared humanity. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye for now.